another edition of the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, hosting the show as usual, and also founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that supports people with cancer in adopting what's called an integrative approach to their cancer care, an approach that pays as much attention to overall health and well-being and lifestyle issues such as nutrition, fitness and stress levels as it does to the cancer itself. My guest on the show this week is Dr. Adil Khan, a practitioner who is pushing hard at the boundaries of what is possible in cancer care, with a particular interest in harnessing the capacity of the immune system in a variety of ways. Adil, a very many thanks for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, while most practitioners are becoming ever more specialised, you seem to be engaged in a whole raft of fields. But I wonder, is there actually a connecting thread that runs through all your chosen fields?
Yeah, exactly. It's so interesting you brought that up because I was just reading a paper the other day from this infectious disease specialist who proposed that our entire medical curriculum needs to be revamped. And this was almost 10 years ago. And this, instead of being organ-based, which traditionally it's like, you know, you learn about nephrology, the kidney, you learn about the heart, you learn about the brain. He proposed it needs to be mechanism-based. So meaning instead of, because there's an infinite amount of insults our bodies can have, but there's only a finite number of responses. So if you learn what those responses are from a cellular physiological level, then you can understand the body foundationally the way you're supposed to be. And of course, medicine, you know, 50 years ago, organ-based made sense, right? Because that's what we thought how the body worked. But this, now we realize, hey, that's not how the body works. Everything communicates with one another. Yeah. And so so exactly like you said, it's funny because, yes, it's like I am kind of more specialized, but in a way, I'm treating things that aren't in my specialty because by training, I'm an interventional pain sports physician, meaning I treat chronic pain and injuries, but now I'm using regenerative medicine to treat, yeah, like inflammatory bowel conditions, autoimmune disease, cancer, all sorts of things. And it's because it's about mechanism. It's about what's the underlying pathophysiology of the disease that causes the patient to have this. And, you know, one of the best quotes I attempted is that all disease starts in the cell. So once you understand all disease starts in the cell, it gives you a foundational kind of paradigm to go by. But unfortunately, a lot of doctors hate that stuff because it's a lot of memorization, a lot of pathways, and, you know, they just rather focus on, hey, this is your problem, this is how you fix it, instead of focusing on the underlying pathophysiology.
Well, that's very interesting. So a whole different way of looking at things. So we're talking here about, as you say, mechanisms that cross the boundaries between separate disciplines, as you say, are focused on particular parts of the body. And would you say this was looking more at metabolism then?
Well, metabolism, metabolic damage or metabolic issues is one of the ways the body can have issues. But really what it's looking at is how can a cell become dysfunctional? Right. So there's a lot of different ways. And so you have to go back to, you know, in physics, they call it first principles, but in biology, it's a better term for it is what's the root cause or what's the root dysfunction. And right. So if you look at a cell, a cell isn't that complicated. We all learned the cellular biology in like grade 8 or something, right? We learned that the mitochondria is the powerhouse. We learned that the nucleus is where the DNA is and et cetera, et cetera. And so when you go back to that physiology, then you can go back to the basics. And once you have a strong grasp of the basics, then you can understand, hey, this is how disease actually starts. So obviously, because this is a cancer-focused podcast, how does cancer start? It's really genomic instability. And that happens because over time, you get increased mutations that the body can't repair itself. And then over time, that's called genomic instability. And there's ways to even measure that now. But that happens at the nucleus. And why does that happen? Right. And so asking those questions, why does that happen, is what I'm very interested in and learning about. And, you know, whereas I think conventional medicine, which has a place, obviously, is focused more on once you have the problem, let's treat it.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely right. That question of like, well, why? So there's no good answers around. At this point, when somebody asks you why, what do you say?
Why cancer?
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different reasons, but why does the genomic instability start? Why does a cell become incapable of repairing damage that it normally could repair? This all comes back down to the immune system. And where is most of your immune system? It's in the gut, 70 to 80%. And the rest is in your thymus glands and lymph nodes and whatnot. And so majority of it, interestingly, comes back to the gut. And so I think a lot of chronic disease, including cancer, is related to chronic immune dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And that immune dysfunction happens for a myriad of reasons. It could be antibiotics, being exposed to environmental toxins, chronic inflammation, stress, processed foods, UV damage from sunlight. There's chemical factors. There's so many things that can trigger that chronic, damage to the immune system and that chronic inflammatory response and that inability for the body to repair itself. So if your immune system is functioning optimally, that is by far the best way to protect yourself from cancer. And how do you get your immune system to function optimally is really the question that interests me and what I'm really interested in. And that's why I'm so interested in cellular therapy, because really the fundamental basics of cellular therapy, especially what we do, is really restoring immune function, because it does what's called immunomodulation, which means you're changing the signaling pattern of the immune system from pro-inflammatory to anti-inflammatory, and you're creating an environment that helps to prevent and or even treat cancer.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Right. Well, we're going to talk about that some more for sure. But first, I wonder if you give us a brief summary of your trajectory, the career path that's led to your current interests and endeavors, starting with your reasons for engaging in medicine right in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty simple guy. So for me, it was always about just wanting to help people. And that was really the basics of going into medicine. But once I got into medicine, it was basically like, are we really helping people or are we just kind of putting out fires? And so I couldn't but think, why are we not thinking about the cause and the prevention of everything? And that was just maybe a natural inclination, because I was always into health and fitness. And because of that natural inclination, I was asking those questions. And when I started asking those questions, it led me to integrative and functional medicine, which is what I started studying in medical school while learning allopathic medicine. But because I was kind of studying both at the same time, because med school is, it's relatively easy to pass. So you can do it, without too much effort. And so it gave me a lot of free time to focus on other topics. So I was reading a ton of books on everything alternative to understand, hey, maybe there's more to what they're teaching us in medical school. And I got super fascinated and just, got obsessed with that kind of whole functional medicine paradigm and going back to what the root cause of disease is. And then, that led me into kind of regenerative medicine once I finished my training, because it just seemed like that's where the future is. Because regenerative medicine, essentially the definition of regenerative medicine is, can we restore or repair function of a tissue back to a previous state? And so instead of cutting something out, or instead of just giving a pharmaceutical, can we restore it back to a previous state? And so that's a broad definition, but it's coming to light now because there's this really cool advancements in terms of cell therapy, gene therapy, and tissue engineering and gene editing, and all these things that kind of fall under the umbrella of regenerative medicine that are coming together to allow us to actually repair tissue back to a previous state. And so I think, 10 years ago, this was probably just a scientific, dream. And now it's actually happening before our eyes. And so I'm super excited about the next 20 years, because I think medicine is going to shift from being a reactive, primarily treatment-based type of, specialty to being more curative and being restorative.
I hope you're right. So looking now at particularly cancer treatment, you, as you've already said, you're very interested in the immune system and you're interested in immune therapies. You are involved with immune therapies that involve NK cells and dendritic cells, for instance. I wonder if you'd start off by explaining what each of these cell types is and what particular function they perform.
Yeah, I think most people understand natural killer cells because natural killer cells are part of your innate immune system. They're basically just like a type of white blood cell that helps to kill infections or helps to kill disease or something that doesn't belong in your body. And it recognizes it and it'll fight it off. That's why it's called natural killer. It's a natural killer. It's literally in your body there to kill things that don't belong there. And so I think from an intuitive level, most people can understand that. Dendritic cells are a little bit more interesting. They're kind of like the general that orchestrates your immune response. And so what they do is they actually help to present foreign antigens to your T cells. And the T cells are part of your adaptive immune system, which means it's not innate. It's over time, it has to be trained. And so the ability for your T cells to function well depends a lot on your dendritic cells. And some people's dendritic cells become dysfunctional, and therefore their T cells don't respond the way they should. And so one of the hallmarks of cancer is that they become immunoevasive, meaning your body for possible variety of reasons can't recognize a cancer cell and therefore it can't kill it. But if it could recognize it, it could kill it. And that's the interesting thing about some of the cell therapies, because essentially or gene therapies as well. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to say, hey, body, recognize this cancer cell and kill it. And so that's what immunotherapy does, is it tries to, and that's why it's called immunotherapy, is because it's using your immune cells to boost your immune system so it can try to fight off some of the cancer cells.
Well, that's an interesting idea. It's quite a different idea, obviously, to the traditional cancer therapies, which is simply about trying to kill cancer cells. You're trying to encourage the body to do the job itself.
Well, exactly. Try to encourage the body to do it itself. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. And that's one of our sayings at our company called Eterna, is basically harnessing the natural body's healing ability. So we're trying to harness, you have natural healing abilities, and we're just trying to harness them and empower your body to do what it can do.
Well, sort of philosophically, if you like, it makes a lot more sense in many ways than the chemotherapy type approach, which is about killing cancer cells. Because unfortunately, of course, it has the most destructive effect on your immune system, which, as you said, has played an enormous part in allowing you to get cancer in the first place, because it's compromised in some way. So the therapy itself is further weakening your ability to deal with cancer in the long term. So to actually look to work in the other direction, to actually support the immune system, does make a lot more sense.
Exactly. And clinical trials have actually shown that when natural killer cells are combined with chemotherapy, patients have better outcomes and less complications as well. So to me, it's all about, I think you talk about this because I went through some, it's all about integration. And chemotherapy and surgery, they still obviously have a place in oncology, but why are we ignoring all those cell therapies and integrative approaches? I mean, even supplements like turmeric and curcumin has been shown to help reduce the effects of chemotherapy. So there's so many things that just get ignored by conventional medicine, which always baffles me.
It always baffles me as well. It's simple enough. Is that they're not pharmaceutical products, and they're not patented. So that's the only reason why
people are waking up to that, which is the beauty of social media.
Well, yes, absolutely. So yeah, there's some marvelous things that will combine with conventional therapy and make them far less destructive, improve the quality of life substantially, and the evidence behind them is enormous. I mean, you know, turmeric or medicinal mushrooms have got enough evidence to support their use everywhere, but they're not.
Well, the big thing with those treatments, whenever you're assessing an intervention in medicine, you need to look at what's called number needed to treat versus number needed to harm. What is the benefit versus the risk, essentially?
Right.
There is absolutely zero risk in taking turmeric and mushrooms, essentially.
Yeah.
And so, they're super safe. And they could be beneficial, whereas chemotherapy and immunosuppressants have so much risk with them. So you better have a lot of data to back that up. So I think it's a very different paradigm. And that's the whole problem with medicine. It looks at everything in the same lens, where you have to be more contextual and kind of understand things in different contexts, essentially.
Mm. Well, I'm very glad to hear you say that. It's a point I'm always trying to back home, is that things that are essentially like food, for instance, don't need the same safety trials that chemicals do. And they shouldn't be judged with the same set of rules.
Exactly. And we know from my favorite food, just so I throw it in there, is broccoli sprouts for cancer prevention.
Right.
Because broccoli sprouts have the equivalent of like something like, you know, I think it was like 50 cups of broccoli
right.
in one serving.
Really?
And you get so much of those antioxidants and sulforaphane, which is hard to get through your diet unless you're eating broccoli sprouts. And those things can, from a mechanistic level, help. And we know in vitro studies help reduce the proliferation of cancer. So what's the harm in adding a broccoli sprout a day in your smoothie or something, right? There's so much potential benefit and no harm.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing with cell therapies and gene therapies too, the new generation of gene therapies, that there's very little harm and there's a lot of potential benefit. Whereas with chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, there is a lot of potential harm and there may not always be benefit. So I think you always have to look at the whole picture.
Mm. All right. Well, I want to hear more about this sort of safety profile of these treatments.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Interesting. So can we just step back? You were comparing NK cells and T cells. And so NK cells, they're natural killer cells. They're kind of part of our system, built in, ready to go. T cells, they need to learn. I think you used the word adaptive. And so these cells have got to be taught, look, there's some bad guys over there. You've got to go get them. And this is what's not working in the case of cancer quite often, is that they're not adapting in the way that we would hope and therefore doing the job. So the dendritic cells that you mentioned, this is where they come in. This is their job here, to actually somehow inform the T cells of what the enemy looks like. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, exactly. It's a battle going on, right? And so essentially the dendritic cells are like the general. They have to present to the T cell to say, hey, this is the bad guy. It's called an antigen presenting cell, or APC, in immunology. But essentially, they have to present it so that the T cell can recognize it. But a lot of times, because cancer cells are smart, they don't differentiate themselves that much from your own cells, so your immune system can't recognize it, and therefore the T cells can't kill it. So this is the beauty of CAR T, which is basically gene editing technology to T cells. So it's called chimeric antigen receptor. And essentially what it's doing is it's doing genetic modification. And so it can essentially encode this CAR gene onto the T cell. And this CAR gene, when it expresses this, it allows it to recognize the cancer cells in your body and it can kill them. And so they take your own T cells out of your body. They use a process called leukapheresis, which is essentially just a way to take out your T cells. And they can use gene editing technology to attach this CAR, gene modified protein, and then they can expand this. They can expand the cells in the lab, and then they can infuse them back into your body. And when they infuse the T cells back into your body, they can actually target the cancer cells. And then the cool thing about T cells and B cells as well, which is another part of your immune system, they have a memory. And so what that means is, in the future, if the cancer does come back, the CAR T cells will be able to remember and can rapidly deal with the cancer effectively if it comes back. So CAR T is the perfect, beautiful kind of, you know, symphony of being able to combine gene editing and cell therapy into a customizable approach to treat cancer. And it's being used for mainly blood cancers, because that's what it's effective for, like leukemias and lymphomas. But they're working on a lot of different CAR Ts now for autoimmune disease and for different cancers as well, because you can modify the T cell to recognize and alter different cellular pathways. I think CAR T is going to get more and more traction. Right now, the problem with CAR T is it's very expensive. And so we're actually working, you know, with our stem cell manufacturers and some geneticists, and we're going to make our own CAR T and try to bring the cost down by half. But our goal is to bring the cost down by a tenth. because right now CAR T is $500,000 for a treatment.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's the world's most expensive cell treatment. but our goal is to, you know, I think in 5 to 10 years it could be 50,000, and that's my vision with it. But I think that's where it's headed. You know, as technology improves, as cell expansion, cell manufacturing, all those processes improve, then you're going to have, cost reductions and savings for patients.
Right. Okay. Well, look, one important question. One of the major shortcomings of a lot of cancer treatments is that they might be effective at the time, but a little further down the line, they no longer work because the cancer itself has evolved. And whatever the process was can't keep up with it. So how does it relate here? If you've say you've trained your immune system to recognize cancer cells, if they then mutate, does that training is it still valid? Does it still work, or do you need to start again?
No, you'd have to start again, and that's where I think precision medicine comes in, where you can actually use. There's this technology. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Cancer Avatar.
No, I don't know that.
So an avatar, you've probably heard of the movie Avatar, right? Where, you know,
sure, and, yeah, yeah.
So essentially, it's an avatar, meaning they take the cancer from your body and they actually put it either into an animal or they put it, now with technology has improved, they can actually use what's called an organoid. And organoids are 3D cell cultures that self-organize. So essentially, they can make these organoids in a petri dish, and they can put the cancer into that organoid, and they can figure out exactly what treatment would work best for this cancer
right
before they give it to your body.
Yeah.
And that's where I think medicine needs to go, because right now it's so haphazard. It's just saying, you know, at least with breast cancer, we've evolved a bit and there's more specifics. But the reality is there's hundreds of different types of breast cancer. And that's what we're realizing now. And so it has to be precise and individualized, customized treatment of cancer for each patient.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, interesting. So we've mentioned three different types of immunotherapy now, using straight NK cells, working with dendritic cells to get your T cells trained up,
yep.
And then CAR T therapy, which I understand is kind of like much more sophisticated than the other two. Is that right?
That's right, because there's a gene editing component, whereas the dendritic and natural killer cells, we're essentially just taking them either from your body or we're taking someone else's and we're just infusing them into your body. And so it's a fraction of the cost of CAR T, but it may not have the same outcomes. But however, having said that, the clinic I partner with that does that is actually in Japan, and they've been doing it for over 10 years because they're one of the first in the world to use dendritic cells. And they have patients who were stage 4, you know, pancreatic cancer, told they were terminal and had 3-6 months live, and they did the infusions of the dendritic and natural killer. They're still alive 10 years later.
Right.
So I think, you know, obviously when you have anecdotes like that and you get thousands of anecdotes like that, I think you have a hypothesis that can be very interesting to see. We probably need more clinical trials, but I think the big thing again is those dendritic and natural killer cells have no harm and they have a lot of potential benefit.
Right.
And personally, I'm doing natural killer cells on myself once a year because why not? It's going to strengthen my immune system and it may help to prevent cancer, and I have access to it. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
And so I think from that, I'm all about prevention, and I think that's one way to easily do it for sure. I think the other immunotherapy that I think is very interesting are oncolytic viruses, which is basically a modified virus that can infect and kill the cancer cells. And I think, you know, with gene therapy, now we have what are called plasmids, which are even safer than viruses, because viruses are expensive to manufacture.
Probably.
And there can be risks with viruses as well. Whereas with a plasmid is essentially just a string of DNA that's of bacterial origin. And so there's no actual live bacteria in there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing in there to cause an immune reaction. There's no chance of infection. There's no chance of something going wrong. But the plasmid can be just as effective as a virus. It's actually, plasmids only came out in the last like 5 years,
okay,
in gene therapy, but they're super fascinating. And I think there's going to be a lot of research done using plasmid gene therapies for a variety of things, one being cancer.
So tell me, how do they work? They're not actually a live virus. They're not going to have a direct effect in that way. What's actually going on?
They're just a strand of DNA, which can be modified to essentially insert and target any particular cell in your body. So, for example, one of the plasmid gene therapies that's out there is called follistatin gene therapy. And it's essentially, when you do the injection, it releases this protein or peptide called follistatin every day at a low dose. And follistatin is a really important peptide that decreases as you age. And it helps to not only decrease risk of cancer because it activates something called FOXO3 pathway. It reduces inflammation. It inhibits something called myostatin, which allows your body to increase lean body mass. So it has all these amazing benefits that you can get from one gene therapy injection. And that gene therapy is a plasmid vector that essentially releases that peptide every day at a low dose. If you had cancer, what you could do theoretically is essentially you could have this, you could have what are called microRNAs inserted into the gene therapy to target a specific cancer and kill that cancer.
Okay, all very crafty stuff. So with this array of immunotherapies, can you give some idea of the effectiveness of these treatments and for whom they are effective?
Yeah, I think, you know, the people that are going to, that I've personally seen have the most benefit from these type of things are going to be people who are not, you know, are typically not stage four, usually going to be stage two or stage three. And that's where it tends to be more effective. Having said that, there are patients with stage four who have had good results. I think, as I was saying earlier, I think it can be one of those things that anyone really who's going through chemotherapy should consider natural killer cells and dendritic cells. What's the downside in having that as part of your chemotherapy? There is no downside, and there's a lot of upside. So to me, it's almost the equivalent of adding turmeric or mushrooms or whatever to your chemotherapy regimen, because it's essentially going to help to mitigate side effects, and it may boost the outcomes as well.
Right. So that's something you think could be a benefit to anyone, pretty much.
Anyone fighting cancer, really.
But that's just with the simpler therapies you're talking about there. How about if you get with the more sophisticated ones? Who are those working for? And what kind of chances of a good result are there?
I think CAR-T is very specific right now. It's really only for blood cancers, such as leukemia or lymphoma.
Okay.
And then, you know, so I think those are the only ones really where we have the evidence and the use for. There's still clinical trials going on for other things, but that's primarily what CAR-T can be used for. And then, although this isn't immunotherapy, it's still related to stem cells. Stem cell transplants are increasing in terms of their effectiveness, because we don't necessarily have to just rely on bone marrow transplants anymore. You can use umbilical cord transplants as well. And umbilical cord, it can be more accessibly create. Obviously, it's more accessible because there's more, you know, it's easier to get umbilical cord tissue. And it's also something that is being worked on is using just it's called genetic reprogramming, which is basically where you take a cell from the body and you reprogram it into an undifferentiated stem cell. So you could take any cell, any somatic cell in your body. You could take a muscle cell, a fat cell, and you can transform it back into what's called an induced pluripotent stem cell. It was actually given the Nobel Prize in Japan, 2014, Yamanaka. It's called the Yamanaka factors. And so
this is kind of reverse engineering of cells.
Exactly. And how cool is it that your body has this ability to turn back into a baby stem cell? I just think that's so fascinating that your body can even do that, and just with some over it's basically just genetic reprogramming using certain transcription factors, and just overexpressing them causes your cells to go back into this naked stem cell state. And what that does is it allows you to create as many stem cells as you need that you can eventually use to replenish your bone marrow. If you have some sort of myelodysplastic disorder, myelodysplasia, or some sort of bone marrow cancer. So I think I think you're going to see a lot more iPSC derived cancer treatments over the next few years. There's already some being worked on. I believe there was one for HIV that was done successfully this year, where they used a bone marrow transplant using and essentially a bone marrow transplant to cure patients with HIV.
Mm. So this is not a replacement for transplants, and it's actually just a new source for the cells that you use in the transplant.
Yeah, but you can have almost, because you don't have to rely on the whole, you can basically create all the cells in the lab that you need. So you don't have to rely, you don't have to rely on donors.
Right, which is obviously a huge plus, because sometimes donors are hard to come by for rare blood types. Yeah, interesting.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, so I noticed that you conducted a trial in Canada with mesenchymal stromal cells. Well, how does this relate to what we've been speaking about already?
Yeah, we're still the clinical trial we're doing is essentially for osteoarthritis, which is obviously different from cancer. But again, if you look at the underlying mechanism of osteoarthritis, it's related to chronic inflammation.
Yeah,
and there is something called the gut joint axis, which we know about, right? And the gut, I made a post one time about a leaky knee. What I mean by leaky knee is that your immune cells are penetrating into the cartilage and they're causing this chronic inflammation and they're causing degradation of the cartilage and you're eating away at it. So again, it comes back down to a dysfunctional immune system. So it's the same principles, just a different disease. But the problem with medicine right now still is that an orthopedic surgeon has no way to communicate with the oncologist because they just speak different languages.
Right.
But I'm kind of taking a step back and I'm looking at the whole body from first principles, as I like to say, and trying to understand what's the root of it. And you know, when you look at it that way, you realize there's only a few root causes for every disease, every chronic disease, that is.
Right. Well, that's something that's becoming increasingly apparent, that, yeah, the same factors are involved in just a whole range of chronic diseases, you know, and these same factors just happen to manifest in different chronic diseases in different people. And, you know, I think that's pretty well the common currency in integrated circles now, and it's creeping into the mainstream as well, I think, to some extent. Whether it'll have the effect of making the giant leap that you're making, going from this kind of a siloed approach to medicine to actually, you know, a proper collaboration, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's really a paradigm shift, and it will take probably a long time for your traditional doctor to switch. But because patients are self-educating themselves so much, I think it's going to put pressure on the system to change, or else patients will just travel outside of their countries, which is what's happening.
Right.
Medical tourism is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
And why is that? Why are patients leaving the US and Canada and all these quote unquote great countries for medicine to go to other places? It's because our systems are basically driven by pharmaceutical and surgical lobbies.
Interesting. So, coming back to the immunotherapies, some of them have got a long track record. I mean, dendritic cell therapy has been around for a long time now, hasn't it? Whereas, the CAR-T work is obviously right, cutting edge. And they're different costs. They're quite different beasts in a way, even though they're all immunotherapies. I mean, what criteria would you use to choose between them in any one case?
I mean, I think with CAR-T, you're really only limited to blood cancers.
Right,
and
sure.
I think with dendritic and natural, I'm usually using those more for solid tumor cases where surgery may not be an option, or they did surgery, but there's still some remains, or they try, you know, or they don't want to do chemotherapy, or they've tried chemo and they're still having issues. So It's a mix of patients, I would say, that we're looking at. But I would say the most common, I think by far, are patients who just don't want to do chemotherapy because they don't want to destroy their whole body and they want to try something else. And I think patients should have the right to choose that. if they want to try an alternative that may work. And I'm not saying don't do chemo after if it doesn't work, but why not try my, if it was my mom who had cancer, why would I want her to go through chemotherapy first? I would rather her try the natural minimally invasive options first. And if that doesn't work, then hey, fine, we can go to chemo. But why would I, natural killer cells and dendritic cells and or CAR T, or, you know, even like they're not going to have any harm on the body. And it's, there's, so to me, it's like, if we can try those minimally invasive, least harmful interventions first, I think that should always be our guiding principle. Because in medicine, we're always taught first do no harm, but somehow that's been forgotten.
It has been forgotten. I mean, you keep talking about these non-harmful treatments. I mean, is the safety profile of them all very high indeed?
Yeah, and there has been data on that. And there's also, if you come back to mechanisms as well, like, yes, there's safety data for sure, in clinical trials and in vitro and in humans as well. But also, if you come back to mechanisms, what is, like, if you think about it, if you're putting something that's already in your body but that is deficient, and you know it's deficient because you have cancer, you wouldn't have cancer in the first place if your immune system was working properly. So if your immune system is not working properly and you have cancer, you know, and you're doing something to try to boost your immune system with immunotherapy, you're not really doing any harm. You're just trying to restore something that isn't working properly in the first place.
Right.
It's the same thing when we treat like rotator cuff tears in the shoulder. We use stem cells to regenerate the tendon because it's not, there's a gap or there's a hole, and we're just trying to restore that hole. Why do we need to cut it out or try to stitch it back together if we can regenerate it?
Right. Yeah. Makes complete sense. So these immunotherapies, are you tending to always think about them in combination with other therapies, or do you occasionally use them as standalone therapies?
No, I'm a huge believer in the integrative medicine approach, and I have integrative oncologists I work with that I think are good for, you know, supplementations, nutraceuticals, lifestyle, like dietary, all that stuff, optimizing all the lifestyle factors. Because even if you treat the cancer, but you don't change your lifestyle, it may come back.
Right.
So I think that's where it becomes really important to make sure you have a good lifestyle. And so I'm a huge believer in combining that with treatments that we're doing, because even if the therapy and the immunotherapy we do works, you got to change your lifestyle, or else the cancer can come back. Right. So that's kind of the way I like to approach it. Is I like to combine the holistic approach of lifestyle medicine and integrative medicine, and then also regenerative medicine.
So, yeah, lifestyle you're seeing then is a kind of a ground base that needs to be looked at.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the, you know, why do most people get cancer? Like, you know, if we're at the beginning of this conversation, it really comes back down to processed food, stress, environmental toxins, like not exercising enough, not having enough muscle. Like, yes, genetics play a role for sure, but I think we know that it's something like 80% of cancers are lifestyle related. So I think that is the majority factor in the development of those cancers. Like, we know there's something called oncogenes, and oncogenes are basically, you know, if they get overexpressed, they can cause cells to grow uncontrollably. And there's also something called tumor suppressor genes, which suppress the development of tumors. And one of the best ways to stimulate tumor suppressor genes and to also suppress oncogenes is resistance training, specifically muscle, because muscle releases something called myokines, which is a type of cytokine, which is a protein that essentially sends signals to your body to activate these cellular pathways. So we know that if you're doing those type of things, you can help protect your body from cancer.
Very interesting. Well, yes, as first time I've had that mechanism explained to me. Obviously, I appreciate that, exercise is a big new kid on the block in terms of what it can do for you if you have cancer. So very interesting.
The mechanisms are important to understand, because then you can really understand. It just gives you a better appreciation. And I also think I've read some research. When you explain to patients the mechanisms, they're more likely to follow the behavior change.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So interesting. So it's very, you know, I appreciate very much you're well behind lifestyle medicine, you're well behind integration, you also appreciate that there is a place for the old traditional orthodox therapies. I tend to see it in my own picture is that they're kind of firefighting tools that you sometimes need to resort to at moments when things are out of control, and they can be useful for taking the momentum out of a particular situation to give you time to do something more constructive. Is that a fair picture, do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that's the perfect picture of how to, I think, approach cancer. Yeah.
But you already alluded to the fact that, yeah, well, if you're going to use these cell-killing therapies like chemotherapy or radiotherapy, there are a mountain of things you can do to actually make them less destructive to the other parts of yourself that you don't actually not trying to kill, and to help you to recover from the challenge of the treatment itself.
Exactly. I think chemotherapy is just, you know, it served its purpose, I think, for a long time, and it may have a place in the future, but I think the way medicine's going, chemotherapy in 100 years from now, we'll look back at chemotherapy being like one of those archaic medicine practices that we used to do.
Yeah, I think you're right. Hopefully not too long from now.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, based on your experience and your appreciation of the evidence, do you think there's sufficient evidence right now for mainstream cancer care to look like integrative oncology?
Yes, I think there's been sufficient evidence for quite a while, and I'm, you know, I don't know if it's just the establishment doesn't want to accept change, but there's even fellowship training in the U.S. now for integrative oncology, so it's recognized. And so I think there's no excuse to not educate yourself on that if you are an oncologist, and if you generally want what's best for your patient, you would be educating yourself on alternative approaches, because they can work synergistically with what you're doing.
Absolutely. So you mentioned early on in the interview, you mentioned Eterna Health and its mission to empower the body's natural healing ability. Great mission. I wonder if you tell us a bit more about that, what you're doing there.
We're rapidly expanding. We're going into, you know, we're opening up clinics kind of all over the world. And like, we have that partnership in Japan. We're opening one in Dubai, in Europe. We have, you know, US opening, and we have partnerships in Mexico. And the idea is we want to bring a lot of the technologies we have and the treatments we have and make them more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And also raising awareness that, you know, that this is the way medicine's headed. And people deserve to have access to these type of treatments. And some of them are still expensive, but I think, like we were saying earlier, like I think in 5 to 10 years, as with any technology, the price will come down. You know, just like with electric vehicles and cars and Teslas being so expensive, like to get a, you know, 100 kilowatt battery was so expensive and now so cheap. And so I think, relatively speaking, like the size of the battery and the ability to manufacture it. So I think cell therapy is very similar. Cell therapy is manufacturing based, and the technology of manufacturing cells is improving every year. So I think it'll continue to improve, which means we'll have better products and we'll have cheaper products that are more effective. So I envision a future where people can get effective cell treatments anywhere in the world in combination with their traditional treatments if they want. But ideally, we create a world where people have access to treatments that can even, that hopefully can even prevent cancer altogether. I think using something like there's this test called HelixSafe. It's a European, you've heard of it?
No, do tell me.
Oh yeah, HelixSafe. So it's a European company. It's an Italian company. And the scientists behind it have published plenty of journal articles. And essentially, they're the only company in the world that has evidence for supporting that they can pick up what are called cancer driver or drivers of cancer. So basically, their technology, they'd like to say it's cancer driver interception.
Okay.
So they're intercepting the drivers that cause cancer.
Wow.
And what are the drivers that cause cancer? We talked about a few of them: genomic instability, chronic inflammation, there's immune dysfunction, there's mitochondrial dysfunction. It's basically all cellular dysfunctions. It's similar to the hallmarks of aging. It's,
yeah.
So again, it's the same principles as to why you develop cancer. And so this test can help to detect it before you actually develop cancer. And there's a prodromal period that doctors don't talk about. That's between 5 to 15 years is estimated before you actually develop cancer.
Brilliant.
So if you can intervene in that, if everyone had access to HelixSafe and you could intervene, then people wouldn't even get cancer. But, you know, you can't, but scaling that technology and putting the investment and infrastructure behind it is not good for the medical industry, right? It takes away from business. Right. And so I think it has to be moved. It has to be a grassroots movement driven by people. And that's the way it's going right. to go, because people are waking up to the fact that this is controlled from, you know, by the pharmaceuticals and by lobbyists who support the regulators and all that stuff.
Yeah. So is this an expensive test? What is it, a blood test?
Yeah, it's called liquid biopsy. And it's a type of, and essentially liquid biopsy, just a fancy word, way of saying it's just a blood test, but they use special technology. And essentially it's just, yeah, it just gets shipped out to Italy. And it's, I think it's between $500 to $750, depending on where you're doing it.
Okay.
So it's not super expensive, and, well, and it can be super available.
Yeah. Amazing. So that is a real lifestyle prevention tool in a way, isn't it? Because it's actually looking at the effects of your lifestyle, producing these precursors of cancer or chronic disease. And you could actually monitor whether your attempts to put them right are working or not.
Exactly. And those interventions, there's nutraceuticals, there's even pharmaceuticals that you could use potentially, but there's things you can do before you develop the cancer. And I think right now, the way the system's designed, it's essentially just hoping and praying you don't have cancer. You get an MRI or you get a blood test and you're just like, phew, I don't have cancer. But
right,
the HelixSafe test can actually tell you, hey, if you don't change your lifestyle or you don't do, you know, you're going to develop cancer in 5 to 10 years, depending on your risk. And so it can, that's why I really am a big advocate of that test.
Sounds brilliant. Okay, I'll look into it a bit more. So look, we're out of time. Do you want to tell listeners where they can find out more about you and about the therapies that we've been discussing?
Yeah, our website is pretty simple. It's just eterna.health, like eternal without an L. So just eterna.health is where we have all of our treatments and, you know, different specialists who work with us and partnerships. And then I'm pretty active on social media. My Instagram is at dr.akhan, K-H-A-N. I'm going to be there's a Netflix documentary coming out later this year called Longevity Hackers. I think everyone should tune into that, because I have a small feature in it, but there's some big celebrities in there. Edward Norton from Fight Club is narrating. They got Halle Berry and Tony Robbins, Mark Cuban, a bunch of people in there. And I think that's going to be really big, because it'll hopefully penetrate the mainstream audience to understand, hey, there's this whole other side to medicine.
Yeah. Okay. Well, many thanks for coming on the show, Adil. It's been quite a ride, packed with cutting edge information about immunotherapies, of course, in particular. It's been fascinating. Real pleasure talking to you today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I love Dr. Khan's pragmatic approach to tackling cancer, particularly the clear distinction he makes between the need for a high degree of caution and evidence for a potentially damaging treatment, for which the benefit-to-harm ratio is absolutely crucial, and approaches that are health-promoting with extremely low risk of harms. It's also been fascinating to learn more about the recent developments in immune therapies, which is a promising avenue for many people with cancer. Thanks so much for listening today. I hope you enjoyed the show, and you'll want to join me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.